You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com, bringing you the freshest radio in Brooklyn since 2009. Hear directly from chefs to farmers, artists to architects, authors to brewers, and everyone in between. Check out all of our shows on our website or by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. The following is a message from Zingerman's. From June 30th to July 3rd, 2011, come hang out at Camp Bacon, a four-day festival hosted by Zingerman's. The main event is an all-day affair at Zingerman's Roadhouse featuring plenty of bacon, bacon learning, and such luminaries as Alan Benton, John T. Edge, Molly Stevens, and more. The event will be taking place in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Proceeds from this event benefit Southern Foodways Alliance. Also, on Friday, July 1st, there'll be a special benefit performance featuring Andre Williams and the Gold Stars and special guest John Langford and Skull Orchard. Visit www.zingermanscampbacon.com for more information and for tickets. Once again, that's www.zingermanscampbacon.com.
All right, welcome. You are tuned into the Heritage Radio Network, and you're listening to the Farm Report. We're coming to you live from the back of Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Before we start the show, I want to give a little shout out to all my old peeps at Zingerman's. Spent 5 great years there in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and if you're anywhere within 5 hours of the place, you got to drive up for Camp Bacon. It's crazy. You've never seen bacon like this. Just do it. But today, I'm also excited to introduce my guest, Debbie Ball of Eagle Bridge Custom Meats. Debbie, how are you?
I'm fine, Erin. How are you this afternoon?
Good, good. How about you? Are you a bacon fan?
Is there anything better?
I really don't know. I mean, I feel like I have so many vegetarian friends who have been like brought over to the correct side by bacon. It's such a seductive meat, right?
Yes, it is. It's awesome.
And you guys do a lot of smoking up there at Eagle Bridge, right?
We do. We do over a whole variety of different smoke products, everything from, as you just mentioned, delicious smoked bacon for a lot of our friends. And also we do a variety of smoked sausages as well.
Yeah, that is good stuff. And I know, you know, you are the processor of choice for my friends at Flying Pigs Farm, and you can definitely get a taste of some of Eagle Bridge's work at the Farmers Market this weekend, Friday and Saturday. Flying Pigs will be at Union Square on Friday and then at Grand Army Plaza Friday and Saturday if you want to stock up for the 4th of July holiday. But today we want to kind of continue a little bit where we left off last week. We had Nick Phantasma of Paradise Lockers in talking about slaughterhouses in the Midwest. And Debbie, you and your brother run a slaughterhouse here in the Northeast up in Eagle Bridge, New York. That's about, I think, 3.5 hours north of the station?
That's correct. We're about 3 hours north of the city. That's right.
Awesome. And so I'd like to start out with a little bit of history of like how you guys got going with the shop and just what's been happening there over the last couple of years and kind of getting the lay of the land for our guests.
Sure. Sure. We're in our 7th year of operation. We started our operation as a processor, working with farmers, local farmers who were raising their animals for sale primarily as freezer meat, and we were operating under New York State inspection. So the animals were farm dressed, so killed on the farm, and then they were brought to us for packaging and processing. And as time went on, the demand and the request for product that was processed under USDA inspection continued to grow, and a lot of our farmers were branching out looking for ways to help sustain their business and grow their business, and for that they needed to be able to have their animals slaughtered under inspection and then processed under federal inspection so that they could market their products anywhere throughout the country.
So without that kind of USDA seal of approval, how can farmers sell their meat?
they're very limited in terms of what they can do. Generally, in New York State, it means that they are marketing their product exclusively within New York, and that they're selling basically as freezer trade. So it's a product that's not for resale at that point, unless it's processed under inspection.
Okay. So you guys made the transition, and you added on to the processing facility, you added the slaughtering facility, and that was, October will be your second year anniversary, right?
That's correct, right. At the end of October, we're coming up on our second year that we've been operating the slaughterhouse, which we added, so that then farmers had the option to be able to bring us the animals. Well, their choice at that point was to bring us the animals, and we handle the processing from start to finish. So we do slaughter under federal inspection. We are then, and then we do all of the processing, including all of the smoked and specialty products that we make as well under inspection at our facility.
Okay. And so, you know, we talked with Nick a little bit last week about kind of the size of their operation. What is the size of the operation up at Eagle Bridge? I mean, you guys are doing what animals, and kind of what's a general week look like as far as volume for the slaughtering side?
Right. We're small in the scope of things, I guess, but what we do is we do all species. So we're doing goats, we're doing lambs, we're doing, I shouldn't say all species, we're doing goats, we're doing lambs, we're doing beef, and we're doing pigs. Typically, we do beef a couple of days a week. It's around usually a total of about 20 head that we process in a week.
Okay.
Pigs, we do one day a week, and we do about 30 to 35 pigs in a day. And then one day a week, we do smaller animals, and the goats and the lambs, and that usually is about 50 that we handle on that particular day.
Yeah, we were just chatting earlier this week about the No Goat Left Behind project that we're working on for the fall, kind of taking a look at dairy goats in the Northeast. And thinking about kind of issues that are specific to the Northeast, you know, one of the things that you hear a lot about is farmers having access to slaughtering facilities. And, you know, that's a lot different. Seems like in the Midwest, there's a bigger concentration where that's not so much of an issue. Now, as far as demand, I mean, how far are your farmers traveling to get to you to use your facilities?
We have farmers that are coming from up to like 100 or 150 miles away. A large portion of the farmers that we support are in Columbia County, and also we reach out as far west as out to the Utica area, actually. Because of where we're located, we also reach over into southern Vermont and into western Massachusetts as well. And then, of course, sitting in southern Washington County, there's a whole variety of farmers that are here that we also work with as well.
What would you say, I mean, since the build-out of the slaughtering facility is still pretty fresh in your mind, I mean, would you say that the East Coast has any particular challenges or hurdles that might set it apart from what's happening in the Midwest or the West Coast?
Well, I think there's one of the reasons that we initially decided to even enter the business, even on before we decided to go under inspection, was there is such a huge demand for the service, and the waits, the waiting times are very long, and it makes it difficult again for the farmer to expand their business. I think some things that also happened in the Northeast over the past, I'm going to say the past 10, 12 years, is that you saw many of the slaughterhouses decide that it was not profitable or practical for them to stay in business. And then there were also, within our specific region, there were several that unfortunately went through fires or damage that were actually then they were closed and never reopened. So there was a huge bottleneck of work that needed to happen and animals that needed to be processed without much room for any place for people to go. And so that's probably the biggest challenge that we see.
Okay. And just to get a sense of what the finances look like on the slaughtering end, I mean, what does it cost someone if I want to bring my goat or my cow or my pig in? Like, what's the going rate for a slaughter fee?
Okay. If we're doing a smaller animal, like a goat or a lamb, at that point it's $35 for the slaughter. And then if we're doing a larger, a pig is $45 And to do a beef, we charge $90 for the slaughter. Processing, it depends. On the pigs and on the beef, right now our rates are 80 cents a pound on the hanging weight. And then depending if they're getting other specialty products and smoke products done, then obviously there are upcharges associated with that as well. But it's, you know, it's, I would say the demand for local product, for quality product is certainly out there. And so our farmers are anxious to grow their business and have grown their business over the last couple of years and expanded with us. And, you know, we do the best we can. It's a pricey business because of a lot of the infrastructure and the costs associated with the insurances and things that are for liability and workers' comp. But we do our best to keep the prices reasonable so that we can all make a living.
Yeah, sure. Well, and I mean, that's the thing. It's like if your prices aren't set correctly, the busier you are, the faster you're losing money.
Yes, correct. That's correct.
So that's something, you know, we talked with Nick last week a little bit about you know, you hear a lot when you're talking about slaughterhouses as far as, you know, how the animals are treated and mm-hmm. how, like, when you're looking at design, you know, what are the factors that make it less stressful for animals. So I'd like to talk a little bit about that. And then I'd also like to touch again on that insurance question and worker safety. So when you guys, you know, you had kind of the benefit of working fresh, you know, you built out a new facility, so you got to go ahead and really choose the design layout. I mean, how did you guys go about that, and how did kind of animal and worker safety, you know, factor into those construction decisions?
Oh, sure. A couple of things. As you're right, the slaughterhouse was brand new for us, and we revamped some of the space that we had for holding pens and things at that time. We spent the better part of almost 2 years really researching and making getting some ideas together about, first of all, were we going to make that leap into go under USDA inspection? And if we did, what did we want to accomplish, and how did we want to make sure that we had the most efficient operation and safe operation that we could? So we traveled, we did a lot of things. We talked to people through all over the country, everything from looking at mobile processing units to traditional brick and mortar operations. We traveled throughout the Northeast to talk to and pick the brains of anybody that would let us in. And because there's such a demand for the service, I think we find that a lot of times as processors we tend to be fairly collaborative in our efforts. So we spent a lot of time researching. We also did a lot of reading. We did a lot of work online, looking at the work that Temple Grandin had done, as well as others, and thinking about how we were going to set up the operation. We also had potential customers and current customers who had been certified by Animal Welfare Approved. And so it was important for them, as it was important for us, to make sure that we were not only meeting the standards set out by USDA, but exceeding that in terms of humane handling. And so we worked together with the folks at Animal Welfare Approved and with our farmers on the design of our slaughter floor, of our holding pens, again, to ensure that we were going to produce a high quality product, and we were going to handle the animals in the most respectful way possible.
That's awesome. That's great. And then what about on the other end with workers? I mean, you had mentioned insurance and mm-hmm. you know, is that's a big cost for you guys, insuring the workers? Does it vary between the processing side and the slaughter side? And, you know, what are some of the kind of the concerns as far as worker safety or you know, protocols that you guys have put into place to kind of protect people working for you?
Yeah, that's huge. We do a lot. Most everybody that comes through, we do some very very detailed training, and we're fortunate to have some folks that are very experienced in the business who are working with the newer people that come on. So we've made sure that we're doing, first of all, that the equipment that we have is in good operating condition and is thoroughly maintained. Secondly, we put a lot of thought into our flooring, our operations, how we handle not only on the slaughter side, but also on the processing side from a safety standpoint, and then especially back over in terms of animal handling, making sure that things like so that our the guys that work for us on that end are not having to for example, get into the pens with the animals. So we've built in some safety features there with catwalks and heavy-duty steel gates and things to protect them. And that way we know that, one, the animals are going to be safe and aren't going anywhere, and the guys are safe as they're working with them and also working out on the floor.
And just to jump in for a second, that's a real issue. I mean, I've definitely heard stories about, you know, farmers dropping their animals off in slaughterhouses and getting a call from the slaughterhouse a few hours later, like, you know, your pigs just ran away, or your goats are down the street.
Right. And fortunately, we've not had that happen, but I think that was a lot of forethought that we put into it in terms of how we were going to set up our unloading areas, how we were going to make sure that, you know, that we were handling it from a humane standpoint, humanely, and also from a safety standpoint. So nobody, for example, no one, when the farmers come, nobody unloads an animal unless someone of us who is trained to make sure that they're doing that for, in a safe manner, is out there with them and unloading. So fortunately, we've not had anybody, we've not had any animals escape. But in all seriousness, it's a huge concern. The workers, our comp for workers' comp, costs for workers' comp are huge. And unfortunately, the carriers that we have been working with, the insurance carriers, they don't delineate between somebody who's working on the slaughter floor versus somebody who's working over on the processing side of it. And there are very few insurance carriers that are willing to take that kind of risk. So it's imperative that, you know, that from a cost standpoint, but bigger from a safety standpoint, that we're doing everything to make sure that our crew is safe, and that allows us to minimize the risk from a safety standpoint and from a financial standpoint.
Well, that's awesome. So when we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to pick up where we left off with Nick last week and talk about the processing end.
Okay, sounds great.
Always on your own. Don't consider trying. Tried you on the phone, but you considered lying. Never had a doubt I'm losing. So I'm tired in my room, trying to be careful. Drinking early afternoon, and lighting up was tearful.
Public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Every Tuesday at noon, Dave Arnold, the author of CookingIssues.com, will discuss new and innovative techniques, equipment, and ingredients. Call in with your own questions to see if Dave and the crew can solve your cooking issues. Again, that's Tuesdays at noon on the Heritage Radio Network.
Okay, we are back, and you're tuned into the Farm Report. We are on the line with Debbie Ball of Eagle Bridge Custom Meats. Debbie, before the break, we were talking about, you know, staff safety issues, and I wanted to ask you, you know, when we were talking with Nick last week, he had mentioned that most of the people they bring on have absolutely no experience in the slaughter or the processing end of the business, and that they are, you know, training people from scratch, more or less. Is that the case for you guys, too, or are you able to kind of tap into, you know, a worker pool with some skill set that is in line?
Yeah, that's very true for our operation as well. We're fortunate that we have two or three guys that work for us that are experienced meat cutters and an experienced butcher. However, almost everyone else, and there are it's a total of 14 of us that are working there now, had little to no experience at all in that field. So training and really making sure that you have people that are that care about what they're doing and are cognizant of how to keep themselves and the product safe is huge, and it's a huge undertaking every day.
Wow, okay. So we hopefully, you know, that'll change as things move forward. I mean, we were talking with Nick about kind of this rise of, you know, in New York, you're seeing it a lot, this rise of, you know, butchers and meat cutters as kind of the rock stars of the food world and sex symbols. And you're seeing them on top, you know, on the front of magazines and in spreads of the New York Times. So hopefully some of that, you know, updated profiling will drive more people into that business. Although, yeah. I have to say, it might not drive them up to Eagle Bridge, New York.
It's certainly getting a lot of attention.
Yeah.
And that's a topic that comes up all the time when I'm talking to people within the industry, is that it's an aging industry, and that there is a definite need for programs similar to the program. There's a program through SUNY Cobleskill, but there are those kinds of needs for that kind of training to help develop those skills and to entice young people to want to go into the business and to learn the skill or this trade and this art in some respects to handling, you know, handling the product.
Yeah, and live the lifestyle. I know I drove up to Eagle Bridge a few weeks ago to pick up some goats for a butchering demo that we did at the French Culinary Institute with Zach Palaccio. And when I pulled up to the back to pick up the animals, Ed, one of your butchers, came out, and, you know, I was admiring his new ride. He's got an old school Mercedes. He traded in for a friend. I guess he does a lot of work for cars. And I was like, you know what? Your status is going up, my friend. Now you're tooling around in the Mercedes. I'm like, it's happening. It's happening.
There we go. And what better place to do it than beautiful Southern Washington County, right?
So with Nick last week, we really talked through kind of from the animal's perspective, you know, from loading until they kind of left the kill floor. And so I wanted with you to kind of just get a little bit into the nitty gritty of what's happening to the animals when they leave the kill floor.
Sure.
And talk kind of through to the end of the processing. And so I know that, you know, after it's weighed on the kill floor, it goes into the cooler, but there's the cooling system. That's a big deal, right? I mean, there's protocol there. So let's start with that.
Right. Well, first of all, when everything that comes off of the kill floor obviously has passed inspection at that point. So the inspector has thoroughly reviewed the carcass to make sure that it was properly trimmed and cleaned, and that everything, that there were no medical problems that they found with the animal. From there, it moves into, we have a series of coolers, actually. The first cooler that it moves into is a kind of a blast cooler that brings the carcass down, what we call down to temperature, which means it has to, by our plans, it has to get down to at least 40 external surface temperature, okay, just below the surface, has to be below 40 degrees by the time it, within 24 hours. From there, often the pigs will then, within the next couple of days, once it's down to temp, is when they start to actually do the cutting.
Okay.
And or the animals might be going out within a refrigerated vehicle, in, you know, half a pig, whole pig, on its way to a restaurant to a chef, very often in the city. The beef is a little bit different. The beef will go through that same, it has to get down to temp. But then our beef moves into another cooler, a holding cooler, and the carcass hangs for about 10 to 14 days generally. And that depends really on the amount of fat that's on the carcass and how long it can be in there before and as it starts to break down and to kind of break down, and the enzymes start to tenderize the meat a little bit more. After 10 to 14 days, then the products are then cut according to the specs that either the farmer or the chef or the end customer has provided, and then and packaged and moved from there.
Okay, so what about hanging time? So the animals move from the kill floor. What happens just if something doesn't pass inspection, or if there's some part of the animal that's no good? I mean, how does that work? Where does it go?
Right. Well, the first thing that happens is if the inspector determines that there's a problem, they'll retain the animal until a vet who again works for food safety comes out and actually makes a determination. If they determine that it is something that is going to make the product inedible and not safe, then they will condemn that carcass, and the carcass needs to be destroyed. And then goes off to the renderer that we use. And we have to log that. We have to make sure the farmer knows. We have to log what the issue was. And it's all, again, then reported back through food safety so that we know that that product has not entered commerce.
Okay. And the rendering plant is what?
We work with a renderer out of Frankfurt, New York, and called Caruso's. And he basically comes, they come and they pick up all of the offal, so all of the innards. They also pick up our hides, beef hides. They'll take, again, any carcass that's been condemned at that point. And then they have various channels that they remarket the products, whether it be the hides, whether it be the byproducts that are there. So they go off with a renderer each week.
And is that, I mean, how much do you get paid for that?
Well, right now they pay us a low premium that's a low amount that is on per pound that they take out. We typically have anywhere from 10 to 15,000 pounds that go out, and they in the market varies. Sometimes there's nothing that's paid,
uh-huh.
And then sometimes depending on the demand that they have for product, they'll pay somewhere between a few cents on the pound for that every week. The hides is a different story. Again, the beef hides go off and are tanned and made into leather. It really depends on the demand on the market. And I've seen hide prices be at times where over the years where it's, you know, not even worth it to save the hide sometimes.
Uh-huh.
And as much as being up in the low $50 to $55 a hide over the last couple of years. It's hit a peak.
And those are things that you guys are kind of like price takers. You're not like really in a position to negotiate, because if they don't take it, then you're stuck with that 10 or 15,000 pounds of...
Absolutely. And there have been times, too, when we actually had to pay to get rid of that, to dispose of that. So being in a position now where we can work with somebody who has another way to market that product, if you will, has put us in a better, position to, and a better cash flow, better financial position, certainly.
Yeah, that was one of the things we didn't talk about with Nick that is just coming, reminding me now, kind of talking about this issue is, and I remember from when you guys were doing your build out, the issue of sewage, because you're doing so much washing, on the kill floor, in the processing floor, in addition to kind of any other materials that are going to kind of go out the drain.
Right.
That was a big part of your build-out plan.
Yes, that was very, very big for us. We half joke, although I think most if it's not a joke, about we probably have as much money under the ground as we do above to support the operation. Obviously, we live in a very rural community. There's not a municipal water source or sewer source that is here. So we had to put in a very elaborate system to be able to catch the waste products, the waste water. We use hundreds of gallons of water every day. And there had to be special grease traps and things that were built into to be able to maintain the system. Leach fields that were put in so that we could ensure that we were maintaining the integrity of the land around us. And we live here. This is home. So
I mean, quite literally. I know
literally.
Your brother Steve is literally up the hill from...
He's on one hill and I live on the other.
Okay,
so.
Yeah. So you're right there.
So we're right there. So we needed to make sure that obviously what we were doing was safe, maintaining the integrity of the land, and also, taking care of what we needed to do. So that was a huge investment, just the money that was going into to support getting rid of all the wastewater.
All right, cool. Well, so the animals have gone through like the multiple mm-hmm. Cooling systems. They've hung for the time that's determined both by, I mean, that's not a regulated thing, the hanging time.
No.
That's like a preference
of the
farmer. And I'm assuming and a space issue for you guys.
That's
because
correct.
If I want to hang my beef, to dry age for, I don't even know, another extra week or
right.
something, I have to assume that there's some negotiation that happens there with regards to
that's
kind
right.
of space.
It's very difficult to be able to hang that for more than like 10 to 14 days from a space standpoint, and also just because of that, you have to have such controlled conditions to be able to do that as well. probably the neatest part about the operation, too, though, Aaron, is once it gets past that point, and I know you're familiar with that, we make, we make a variety of specialty products, everything from, delicious steaks that we cut from the beef that is there, but we also make some awesome hot dogs that we produce and that are sold in various venues, again, throughout the state and certainly down in the city. We work with a variety of different butchers that we're helping them to come up with some superior product. We make all different types of sausages, bacon, hams, so it's all the smoke products, kielbasa, liverwurst, you name it. So that's probably the thing that we're best known for is our high quality and all the specialty products that we offer.
So if people want to get, if people want to purchase some of those specialty products, like directly from you, can they do that if they're, up in Washington County? Do you do any kind of mail order, or where would you direct them?
Oh, unfortunately, we do not have a retail store. We process for all of our farmers. They can certainly contact us, and we would be glad to, direct them to people that are within their area. Almost anywhere that you go within the Capital District here, and again, a lot of the farmers markets at Union Square and some of the other farmers markets in the city, you'll find our farmers and the work that we're doing. You'll find lamb, you'll find goat, you'll find the pork that you want and the beef.
So I'm thinking about it. I know at Union Square you guys work with flying pigs, as I mentioned earlier.
Yes.
You work with Grazing Angus,
Three
right. Corner Field Farm. They're all at Union Square.
Right. We're also doing, we also do work with Kinderhook Farm, and they supply product to some of the butcher shops in Brooklyn and in the Bronx. We do a lot of work for Biancardi's up in the Bronx as well, supplying them with, goats and lambs and things for them to be able to sell delicious cuts or sides of product there as well. So
that's awesome.
Along with all the local farmers markets that are within a 50-mile radius of us.
Great. So plenty of opportunities to check out the work you guys have been doing. We are at the end of our time. Debbie, thank you so much for coming on. It's
thank
been awesome. And
Thanks.
I look forward to, having you on again and kind of continuing this butchering and processing and slaughtering discussion. Lots to talk about.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. Did you know we have a beer show? Check out a small clip from Beer Sessions Radio.
All right, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43, and I'm here with Ray Dieter from the DBA Boys.
Hey, Jim.
Ray, this is a fun show. We're drinking Belgian beer. We're drinking Ichtigum, hanging out with the guys from 124 Rabbit Club. And we got Don and Wendy from Van Berg and the Wolf. Well, let's go back a little bit to kind of build your pedigree. So the two of your top brands that we love and that you have now, Scaldis and Saison DuPont.
Yeah, exactly.
Tell us how you met those guys, how you started working with them.
Well, Saison DuPont was really... that was.
If you want to hear more, head over to heritageradionetwork.com where new episodes of Beer Sessions are posted every week in our archive. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast in iTunes.
July 23rd, Bushwick Block Party. It's a party in the street. Free pizza by Roberta. Death Killer Death Wrestling. Featuring the legendary Mad Dog Tosto. Photo Booth by Ryan Slack. Water World. Closed by Chimera Dactyl. Mary Meyer. Lauren Bogart. Death Killer Asphalt Resistant Jeans. All types of food for your face. Sweet soda by P&A. Roberta's Bake Sale. Heritage Food USA. Orange Chaney Eating Contest by the Orange Chaney Brothers. Live music by Alex Drugin. Florida. Paper Twin. Dang Sign. The Netherlands. Team Ropes Pierre. Wild Yak. Tambine. Night Show.
Yeah.
Sponsored by
Martin Greenfield Clothers.
Free Fitness Studio.
Heritage Radio Network.
Free Williamsburg.
6 Point Beer.
Momo's
Sushi Shack.
Beer Box USA.
Planet of the Bates.
Bushwick Block Party. It's a party in the street.
All day long.